Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like
you could just see $100,000,
deducted.
It. Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, wow, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Hello, everyone. In case you missed our very first event with Lady Lunch Club here in Nashville, we are at the beautiful Omni Hotel at the Kitchen Oaks Restaurant and I'm here with our featured guest, Mignon Francois, who is the founder and CEO of the Cupcake Collection here in Nashville. Mignon is so inspirational, and we are so excited to have her here. I wanted to just ask her a few questions so that we could share a little bit of her spirit here with you in this video in case you missed it, or in case you were here and you just couldn't get enough of it. So I'm just going to ask her a few questions now, and you guys stay tuned and make sure you check us out on our website, ladylunchclub.com, and across the social media platforms we'll be at Lady Lunch Club. So, Mignon, it is such a pleasure to have you
here. Thank you so much for having me. What a wonderful gift.
You are so successful in baking and being a small business owner, but I think there is so much about your spirit, like above and beyond that, that I think the world needs to see. So if you could just share a little bit with us about, you know, in your own eyes, how you see yourself and who you strive to be and kind of what you do to get yourself there.
Okay, so I see myself as famous.
I love it. You are famous. You are.
You know, a lot of people won't be honest with you and just tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not intended for it to sound arrogant. It just is what it is.
I love it.
I always knew that I was going to be famous.
Okay.
From a little girl, I would tell my mother that I'm going to be famous one day. And she'd be like, what are you going to be famous for? And I said, I don't know. And she said, well, then be famous. And so there was just always something on the inside of me that said that people were supposed to know my name.
Mm-hmm.
And I believed that if with this fabulous name, I had to put some due diligence behind it to make it great.
Mm-hmm.
And so I needed to wake up every day on purpose to do something good. Now, I didn't get to that until I was 33 years old. Because I didn't think I was pretty. I didn't think I was good enough. I thought my nose was too big. My lips were too big. I wasn't smart enough. What if I don't say the right thing? What if they don't like me? And so it took for me to, my best friend took some pictures of me.
Mm-hmm.
And in my former life, I was a photographer.
Oh.
And so she was saying, you always make people feel beautiful. I want to do the same thing for you.
I love it.
So I'm going to put makeup on your face.
Hey, that's a friend for you, right?
I'm going to put makeup on your face, and you just show me where to point that camera and click
mm-hmm.
it. And I didn't think she'd be able to do that. You know, this was before filters.
Okay.
before iPhone.
Hashtag no filter.
And she took a picture of me, and the pictures came back untouched, and I was like, wow, that girl is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to sit with myself and find out that was me.
Wow.
And I just kept saying, that is me.
Yeah.
That is no one else. That is me. And it was in that time that I began to know the meaning of my name. My name means beautiful.
Wow.
And this is what I've learned over time, that you need to know the meaning of your name, because either you will live out the meaning of your name
mm-hmm.
or you will live out the purpose of the adversary set up against it.
Wow.
And so I always thought it was ugly, but my name said that I was beautiful.
Right.
And when I saw myself as pretty for the first time, I began to walk in rooms and own them. And I didn't do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It just was, I was pretty enough to walk in the room.
It was
right?
a change in the attitude. And,
right,
yeah.
That I could walk, I could stand up straight, I could gather myself
uh-huh.
around my clothes, right?
Yeah.
You know, get my attitude.
Yeah.
I have a be attitude.
Yeah.
And when you think about what be attitudes are,
mm-hmm.
I was still meek.
Mm-hmm.
I was still humble. And I'm going to always be those things. And even though I'm saying this right now, I'm saying it for the benefit of someone else who doesn't know that about themselves,
mm-hmm.
who needs to know that you're all that.
Right.
It doesn't matter what somebody else has to say about you. And it was in that time that I learned the meaning of my name, and then I began to live out the purpose set up for me. And that's why I could do anything.
Wow.
Because I believed it then.
Mm-hmm.
And then other people, when you believe it about yourself, other people will tack on
yeah.
and believe it too.
Exactly.
Because people will believe whatever they see you doing.
Exactly.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's just kind of like, you know how they say the rich get richer
uh-huh.
and the poor get poorer?
Right.
It is, not only is it truth, it's a biblical
mm-hmm.
concept.
Mm-hmm.
It's a biblical truth. And that which you have, when you use it for whatever little it is that you have,
mm-hmm.
it becomes more.
Right.
Because the currency that's performing for you is the faith that you're putting into it.
Yes, exactly. And I think a lot of people look at that scripture, you know, and think of it in terms of just money. But I think it, you know, expands to all aspects of our lives. Like, you know, that what you have and that you're grateful for and that you, basically what you're working with, if you're actually using it, you know, they say you use it or you lose
it.
If you're actually using it, then it grows and it expands for you. And, you know, it may, it probably, I mean, it does also work in the negative sense as well. It's just like what you focus on will expand and multiply. And so I think that's a really interesting point, you know, to bring up on how, you know, whatever it is that you're focusing on, that you're grateful for, that, you know, that you feel like you have, is going to expand and grow for you.
That's a really powerful point that you said. You get more of what you focus on,
mm-hmm.
whether that be negative or positive.
Exactly.
I had a situation in my team where this really great little girl, captain of the cheerleading squad in high school, she's going to cheer here at Tennessee State University. Gigantic dimples that take up her whole entire face.
Uh-huh.
A smile that looks like I created it on her. But she had attitude problems.
Mm-hmm.
And people were writing me saying, that little girl right there, she does not represent you. And
uh-huh.
I'm going to have to let her go.
Yeah.
And I sat her down and said, look, I love you, but I will love you from afar,
mm-hmm.
from across the town.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't represent who I am. And so we focused on the negativity of what she was bringing to the table. And girl, mm-hmm. if one more person writes me about
like,
you,
this is
you
it.
Are going to go. Because I'm so committed to training and raising them in the way that they should go. Not just my village.
Yeah.
Right? I wanted to give her another opportunity. She had like 5 opportunities. Like, girl, look, you just don't want to get this year.
I am trying.
Everybody can't sing backup for Beyonce.
You're
okay?
Right.
So you only want the best.
Right.
I want the best mm-hmm. singing backup
mm-hmm.
for me too.
Exactly.
I'm taking my cues from
I love
Queen Bee, right?
I love it. You can never get too much Queen Bee.
Right. And so as I was thinking about, I was getting more negativity. We were focused on what she wasn't doing, and I decided one day to wake up and focus on the positive in
mm-hmm.
her. Like, girl, you are too pretty for that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, girl, those symbols like that, the world needs to see them. When I focused on that for her, it turned around that day.
Yeah,
that day. And so she's still, the other day she had a talk with the manager. She was like, I just don't understand why people don't get it. And I'm like, really, girl?
Like, oh, how quickly we forget. That's awesome. Okay, so we know a little bit about you. We can see, you know, I feel like it's purity in the spirit. I love it. I connected with you just right from the start. So what is next for you? What, you know, exciting things do you have coming up? Where do you see yourself going? Like, what can we anticipate?
Oh, I want to be doing more of telling people what they can do if they believe. I have a really packed schedule in 2018 that's going to take me traveling
mm-hmm.
into the world to spread this joy. I am on a journey to joy.
Yes.
And I have this mission in my life that people who come in contact with Mignon Francois need to lead healing joy. And if they don't do that, then I have failed at my mission.
Mm-hmm.
But my word for the year is joy and finding joy in the journey, because you can't have a journey without joy.
Yes.
And so it's like we focus on what the first thing we do after we've completed the task is, what did I do wrong so I can next time not do that?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of focusing on what did I do well or what brought me joy. And I'm looking for helping people to find joy. I told you earlier, I want to play hide and seek with joy
because
ain't nobody find her.
Everybody's desperately
seeking her, but nobody can find her.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be up on purpose about finding joy in 2018. But we just got picked up by the Home Shopping Network.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I was so excited. I was watching the video like, yes.
That is a dream come true. Someone asked me if I ever thought that was going to happen to me, and I said, yes.
Did you? I love it. You're like, yeah, I absolutely thought it would.
I didn't know that, you know?
Right.
But like I told you before, like I knew big things were happening.
Yeah.
I just had to prepare myself. There is a great thought, a thinker of our time that said that a man's opportunity is only as good as what he prepares himself to receive it.
I love it.
And I just always see success as a crash, a really bad crash,
mm-hmm.
at an intersection where there are no survivors
mm-hmm.
except for success.
Mm-hmm.
It's where preparation and opportunity collide.
Yes.
And the only thing rising out of the ashes is success.
Oh, I love it.
And that's really what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so in 2018, I'm doing more of that. I'm going to be a part of the American Dream program.
Okay.
That's coming, that just started on the Home Shopping Network.
Okay.
And they said that they believe that I'm one of their next big discoveries.
Yes.
And that was just like,
that is so amazing.
So exciting. And then, you know, just more of nurturing and developing talent,
mm-hmm.
For people to be, who are going to come into my footsteps. I'm doing a lot of giving, a lot of advice.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my daughter last night, and I was saying, you know, it's hard to be in this place where you just would rather just go find the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find a diamond.
Yeah,
and polish that up.
Uh-huh.
But diamonds don't look like diamonds. Many people pass them by.
Right.
And I'm looking for diamonds in the rough to polish up because I want, you know, when I meet my creator, I want him to say, what did you create, Mignon?
Mm-hmm.
What did you feel? What did you do? And I want him to be pleased.
Yes.
So in 2018, I'm doing more of that. But what I'm most excited about is in 2017, we got voted as the best cake in Tennessee.
I believe it. In America, in the world.
So our sweet potato cupcake represents.
Oh, that's my
Tennessee.
Favorite.
Yeah. And so I've opened up a new store in New Orleans.
Awesome.
And I'm going to be opening, you know, more opportunities for people to have franchise opportunities.
Okay.
I'm going to limit it, but
yeah.
I am going to do it. So that's some of my plans.
Oh, that's so exciting. Okay, now if you had to give some advice to somebody out there who's looking at this, who's watching this, and who said, you know, can I do this?
Oh, the thing I would say to them is don't try to be like me. You are the best you that there ever will be. And I want you to spend time being more of that. If I could tell people anything that you're looking for, you have it.
Yes.
It's already on the inside of you. I couldn't bake out of a box. And now I'm an award-winning,
wow.
accomplished pastry chef. They're asking
wow.
me to create a product on shelves,
wow.
and people are standing in lines to receive it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe it. I'm like,
like, is it real?
They want to know what I have to say. They want to
wow.
they want to taste what I've done, and now it's in a place where there's almost nothing I can't make. You know, nothing I can't make, but I know it's not me.
Yeah.
It's who I allow to work in me.
Mm-hmm.
And we're arrogant beings that believe that we come up with anything. But these ideas are throughout
yes.
on the inside of
yes.
us. I heard, I do a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm.
And most of my reading is done in the car. So I listen to
uh-huh.
a lot of books,
mm-hmm.
you know, on CD. And I heard a philosopher say that the average American gets 4 good ideas a year. That
wow.
if they would focus on one of those,
wow.
they would be a millionaire.
Wow. That's an awesome,
right?
Yeah.
One good
wow.
God idea.
Yeah. That's all you need. That's all you need. Oh, I love it. So there you have it. Just a little bit of menu.
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe as a race, African Americans, we play the victim?
Hey, man.
I have a dream.
No. I'm just going to leave that as a one-word answer. I'm not even going to jump in deeper than that. No.
Yeah, I'm on the side of absolutely not. And I will leave it there until somebody disagrees.
Yeah. Then I'll jump back in. And now I'm gonna step back.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm gonna be real. I'm gonna say yes.
Let's go.
I'm gonna say yes.
Give me an example.
See, it's a loaded question just because I'm not going to sit here and say every single African American sides either on the yes side or on the no side.
Mm-hmm.
I say yes to mainly spark conversation, but also I know you're not talking, you said not personal experiences, but that's all I got to go on. I will say, you know, just based on where I am in life, I've gotten a lot of pressure from African Americans. Feeling like, you know, I've gotten to where I am because of white people, or you can't speak, you didn't grow up like I did. Like, I came from the hood, you know, I didn't have the same opportunities and privileges that other people had. And though, you know, I believe that to be true, in today's America, I really do feel like anybody has the opportunity to rise to the occasion. Now, is it easier for certain people over others? Yeah. I mean, let's be real. Yes. Like, that's 100% true. But, you know, I just keep hearing, like, systemic oppression, this, that, and the third. Like, yeah, we get it. I know. Like, we all know. Like, we all know. But the opportunities are still there. Will you have to work a little bit harder to get to where you want to be? Absolutely. Because of how you look? Absolutely. I'm a testament of it. Anybody gonna say nothing? I want to hear this.
I think it's impossible to accuse us of playing the victim. You're talking about a 400 plus year head start for a particular set of people. You're talking about systematic oppression. That's what I meant by a post-traumatic state. Is we're at this stage in 2020. We're trained to say, yeah, it's unequal, but, and that's just not okay to me. I don't think we should ever get to the place where we just accept inequality.
Correct.
I'm not encouraging stagnation, so I agree with you. I'm not encouraging throwing in the towel like, yo, it's not fair. That's not what I'm saying at all. But while striving to be your best self, you should never accept inequality. And I think that's what we're being trained to kind of just be like, yo, this is just the way it is, and to no longer call it out. And I'm not even saying we got to go picket, protest. I'm not saying none of that. But at least in conversations like this, if we're not going to set a standard, no standard's going to be set. Nobody else is going to stand it. Nobody else is going to set it. You're talking about, statistically, like factually speaking, at the onset of the 20th century, you're talking about landowners only giving land to specific races. That's generational wealth.
Yeah.
You're talking about bank loans only being given to specific races.
How can you?
That's generational wealth.
Correct.
So we can't. It's not even like this is ancient history. That's what blows my mind. This is recent history.
But he didn't say that that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
What he said was, "Do we play the victim?"
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very different. You're aware of the things that have happened, but are you victimized as a result of it?
So,
do you say, this is what I can do with what I have been allotted or whatever my place in life is? Are we playing the victim is the question.
Well,
yes,
I think we have to define play the victim.
Okay.
I think we are the victim.
Because anybody can be a victim.
I think we are factually a victim.
So all races
so
can
what,
be victims.
What do we call in playing the victim?
What do you see that as then?
What do I see what as?
Playing the victim, like when you hear that, like what does that trigger for
play,
you?
Play the victim means I'm acting like something is being done to me that's not being done
or
to me.
Or always complaining.
That's what I hear.
Always complaining about our history.
That's what I hear when I hear play the victim. Like you're taking the position that something being done to you and nothing's being done to you. That's somebody playing the victim to me.
This is what I
and
hear.
And that's not the case to me.
This
you know
is
what I mean?
I hear.
Yeah.
Get over slavery. Stop talking about it. We're all equal now. You should be ahead. You should be further than where you're at. Stop talking about the old days. I'm gonna stop right there.
Yeah,
that's what it triggers in my head.
Mm-hmm. So to say like we can't, I don't think you can outrule or like just say, hey, we're some black people aren't playing the victim because everyone uses excuses.
Correct.
And people can be playing the victim by whatever excuse they may bring. But like you said, we weren't given an opportunity basically to build that generational wealth. And without that opportunity, we don't own anything. So we are having to kind of look for employment like at wherever you work. And even you said there's one person at D1 that's black. And we're 15% of the nation. That's not an accurate representation of America. So therefore, we may not be playing the victim, but we're getting hurt in corporate America or wherever part of life. Just statistics.
I'm going to agree with him. I also don't like the term playing the victim because it does sound like you're alluding to something that is not real.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we I'm not dismissing or negating the effects of 400 years of oppression.
Sure.
And, you know, the things that we've seen and been through. I'm not dismissing any of that. But if we cut it all off and we started with a year ago, we are still being victimized by the stuff you have to see on TV. You have African-American boys who at the age of 11 or 12, all they have ever seen were African-American boys being killed on TV. Mm-hmm. That's all they've ever seen. They've not known the life without it because they've watched this happen since they've been old enough to understand. Mm-hmm. They are victims. You can go into a grocery store. You can go into an amusement park. You can go anywhere and be mistreated, and you will be a victim today. We're not talking about the victimization only of the yesteryears. You can be a victim tomorrow. And I think if we're all honest, we have been in places where you have been the victim.
That's right.
You were either wrongly accused or wrongly criticized, or maybe let's not even make it a negative thing. Looked over for a job unjustly. It's happening. So there's a rationale to the relevancy of still being victimized.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like I was to her point, it's not even like this is ancient history. We're talking about 1960s, 1970s. Like the Civil Rights Act was just passed halfway through the 20th century. Like it's not even hundreds of years ago. Like there are people alive still, like you know what I mean, who went through segregation that are still alive. Like it's not even,
of course.
You know what I mean? It's not even ancient history. So I can never agree that the responsibility is on us to fix the mistakes of others. I could never agree with that. I just can't.
And it doesn't take away, you know, something that I said on the back end of my last answer. At some point, as a family, as a community, you can gather the people you love and say, let's get us out of this.
Correct.
And then you could say, well, we're no longer playing the victim. We took pride and took our own responsibility. And then you can build all that up, and tomorrow you can go somewhere and still be disrespected.
To that point, in my initial answer to you, I said I'm not making an excuse for stagnation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not no excuse to be stagnant.
Yeah.
It's not no excuse to not grind and hustle and get out here and get it. But even if his question is about us as a race and as a culture,
mm-hmm.
and if I get my family together and pull my family up, that's my family.
Exactly.
You feel me?
That's right.
That's not balancing the scales.
That's right.
You know
and
what I'm saying?
It's very interesting. Your point is very, very interesting because I could be an extremely successful black man in today's America and still go somewhere tomorrow and be looked down upon
because of
what I look like.
Yeah.
So I was going to ask you, because I remember like Booker T. Washington, like the 1890s, to kind of offset the Jim Crow laws. He was
not
like,
saying
hey,
I'm that old, right? I'm not trying to give
you
some
you remember
factual.
Him, right?
Yeah. I didn't go. I'm the historian.
He said basically,
was my gray showing that much, though, for real?
I was going to ask you this. So you said basically to offset the Jim Crow laws that were put in place, we had to educate and be entrepreneurs. And you two have both done that.
Yeah.
So I'd like to hear your experience, because this is, 130 years later for him saying, hey, we need to mobilize on our own, get education, and be entrepreneurs. And that will create our own system of wealth. But I mean, you're only, like you say, you're only one person. It's hard to pull up a whole group.
Of course.
So I kind of like to hear y'all's experience as being entrepreneurs.
You can talk many
options. I was going to let you go first.
Simone owns her own shop, too, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I'm listening right now.
Well, like I said, I was kind of raised in an entrepreneurial family, right? I was always taught, don't work. I'll just be honest, my father, don't work for the white man. That was it, right? You get education, anything you could take, put it towards your own business. Put your own 2 feet on the ground. Save your money. You know, get a hustle. You know, he's showing me all these things to do. So it was always in my mind that I had to work for myself. The only way I'm going to come up is to work for myself. So I was never trained to, you know, you're going to get a great education, then you're going to go get a great job, and then you're going to be successful, then you're going to raise a family. That was out. Go get your own brand. Raise your family. Give your brand to your family.
Mm.
Let them continue that generational wealth. So that's the way I was taught.
Mm.
And that's the way I got to keep it moving.
Okay.
Rephrase the question that you had specifically.
Basically, what I was saying is Booker T. Washington said to offset any type of segregation or discrimination or from playing a victim, we need to educate and be entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
Has that experience kind of help you push through, and have you been able to bring others up because of your entrepreneurship?
Okay, so thank you for that question. I definitely believe that entrepreneurship is freedom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's ultimate freedom. I was writing down a thought just yesterday as I was flying through Chicago, that one sign of enslavement is a name change. That when people say that you're something that you're not. So if I was to like go and address the same idea with biblical characters, we could look at Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Mm-hmm.
That was not their name.
Yes.
It was their name that they were given in enslavement. And I can just imagine how they were in a room together, and you know, one of them yelled, "Hey, Shadrach, dude, that is not my name. I'm Toby." you know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I feel like we have a responsibility to know who we are.
Yeah.
We have a responsibility to do our due diligence,
yeah,
to make our name great. That somebody can walk around and call you a liar. Is that,
yeah,
who you are?
Yeah.
That's not who you are. Somebody can walk around and call you a thief. Is that who you are? That's the name that,
yeah,
the enslavement,
yeah,
has given you, right? And so I think that the only way that we can exercise true freedom is in ownership of our stuff, of ourselves, of our actions, of the things that we create, that we can be makers. I think that this is the time for all hustlers,
mm-hmm,
to unite,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
that we all can make whatever we want to be a part of. We no longer have to sit back and say, oh, it's because of what you did to me. Listen, I was molested as a child. So if we want to go back and talk about victimization of the things that people have done to us, we can do that. Or we can rise above it and we can say, well, this is who I am now. This,
mm-hmm,
is what I'm going to do. When I started my business, I could not bake, not even out of a box. I didn't have any money. I didn't have any credit. I didn't have any experience in the business. Nobody was going to give me a loan for anything. I was losing the house that the very bakery exists in right now, 11 years later. Because when you put your mind, this is what I was saying earlier, we can be focused on what happened for us,
yeah,
instead of what has happened to us. I believe that it is that blood running through my veins that had things taken from her. You know, it is that blood running through my veins that said, no, you can't come in here. It's that blood that is running through my veins that made my great-grandfather one of the first to be able to sing where he sang. And those are the things that I'm using today to get me from where I am to where it is that I want to be. And it's those things that I'm giving to my children and saying, this is what you have. We're not talking about what we're not. We're talking about what we are.
Mm.
And I think that's the difference.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about what we are, what are we doing right as a culture that's setting up our children to have wealth? What are we doing right as a culture to where our children's children will know our names? Are we doing things right as a culture to change the narrative of our finances, of our children?
I can only answer that as an individual and then see what we...
Do you all believe as a race, I'm not talking about you specifically, but do you believe...
And welcome to Business Boutique. I'm so excited about today because I get to introduce you to one of my new awesome friends. Her name is Mignon Francois. Don't I just sound fancy saying that? Y'all, Mignon is incredible. She is just a light in this world and bubbling with personality. She makes me seem quiet and very low-key. She is the founder and owner of the Cupcake Collection. She has a location here in Nashville and one in New Orleans, a multi-million dollar business that she literally started from scratch. You're going to love her story and love her even more. Check this out. Hey, everyone, and welcome to Business Boutique. I'm so excited because I get to hang out with my very good friend, Mignon Francois. Mignon, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Okay. I'm so excited.
I have talked you up. Ever since you did an interview here at our staff meeting, you are just this light. So for anyone that doesn't know your business and what you do, let's just start with a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I am a stay-at-home mom turned baking prodigy of some sort, where I took the last $5 that I had and I gambled on ourselves. And turn that into over $10 million in the last 10 years.
Oh, is that all? Okay. We're going to unpack how she did that. Don't worry. Okay, so let's back up. Let's back up to the beginning. Mm-hmm. You went through a really low point, and even as you were telling your story, I so identified with that, not because I've been through something similar myself, but my mom has. Mm-hmm. So my mom found herself newly single at 33 with a six-month-old baby and $64 to her name. She had a little bit more money than you did, and trying to figure out, how do I turn this money into a life? How do I turn this money into something that we can survive on, besides just food this week, something beyond that. And she bought supplies and went and made cakes and then sold them the next day and turned that money into what is now her bakery 35 years later. Yeah. So I loved your story, but let's go back to like how you got to that point and what was going on in your head, because now you're this great success story, but at that time you didn't know. Mm-hmm. You didn't know what lied ahead. Mm-hmm. You've got babies. How many kids did you have at that point?
At that point I had six.
Six kids. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you have seven now. Mm-hmm. And so, and you're broke and you're like, take us back there and what that was like and what was going through your head in that moment of feeling like you're in survival mode.
Well, we had come to Nashville for a better life.
Right.
And then as soon as we got here, the job that we got here for fell through. Mm-hmm. Last one hired is the first one fired. But I told God when I came to Nashville, God, I want a home for my children. I'm not doing this same thing anymore. I'm not living in apartments for the rest of our lives. I want a yard for them to play and a fence and rooms that they can call their own. And so almost a year to the date, we moved out of that apartment into what would become our forever home. But it wasn't easy and it wasn't cute or simple, right?
Right.
When we got it, my husband, I was married at the time. My husband called me and he said, I found this house, this cute little neighborhood. It reminds me of New Orleans. And he brought me down there to look at the house. And I was like, this is an ugly house. And the place where you're taking me to eat today better be better than
right,
this
right.
house. And so we went and I saw the people coming out of the...
Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts will check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.